is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. And here's what's coming up.
The government has done nothing to correct the past errors. In fact, it has increased its brutality against trade unionists.
That was Peter Matusa, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, on an international report ranking the country among the top 10 worldwide in violating workers' rights. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. In South Africa, police say they won't arrest former President Jacob Zuma until a high court orders them to do so, even though they have the authority to take him into custody. The country's highest legislative body, the Constitutional Court, sentenced him last week to 50 months in jail for refusing to testify at a commission of inquiry into corruption. It's heard evidence that 79-year-old Zuma orchestrated the plunder of state-owned enterprises of billions of dollars when he led South Africa from 2009 to 2018. Darren Taylor reports.
Zuma says the Constitutional Court has no right to send him to jail because he didn't get a chance to defend himself against a charge of contempt of court. This despite the fact that it was the former president himself who decided not to make any legal submissions. Zuma's advocate, Dali Mpofu, told a court hearing in the city of Pietermaritzburg yesterday that until the Constitutional Court hears the former president's appeal on Monday, he should remain free.
President Zuma, my lord, would not be the first person in this country to face detention without trial.
Mpofu once again presented his client as a victim of political persecution, a victim of an unjust justice system, a victim of racist white capitalists who hated him when he was president because he wanted to empower poor black people. It's all nonsense, the commission's advocate Tembeka Nkaitobi told the judge.
We are dealing with a repetitive, recalcitrant lawbreaker in the form of Mr. Zuma. He has now come to ask you to assist him in breaking the law further. We have a strange scenario in which your lordship has been asked to suspend the order of a superior court. Again, you should reject that.
Zuma's a person, said the lawyer, who tells the justice system he's a very sick old man who'll die if he's sent to jail, then stands on a stage to sing and dance, doing nothing to calm a crowd that's threatening bloodshed in his name to prevent his lawful arrest.
These external features of the case, I'm talking only about the threat of violence, which is hinted in the replying affidavit, and the fact that the police have taken into account a security assessment, those should not detain us, nor should they dictate what the correct legal position ought to be.
Police Minister Becky Cele told reporters his forces have had very good reasons so far for not arresting any Zuma supporters who've gathered outside the former president's home at Nkandla in KwaZulu-Natal province. The main reason, he said, was the presence of more than 100 men armed with a variety of guns.
They even tried to provoke the police by shooting in the air and all that. There were many women, there were many children, and the police had to take a step back.
He says 20 police cameras filmed the perpetrators of crimes at Zuma's home, and law enforcement will use the footage to arrest and charge them.
We will be dealing with that matter, but we are glad and happy that we're dealing with that matter when there is no blood, where there is no woman and child dead, which easily could have happened if police recklessly acted.
And those as has happened in the past, says political analyst Aubrey Machiki, Zuma and his supporters are trying to turn his legal predicament into a cultural battle.
What you do is to foreground the perception that it is not a single man, Jacob Zuma, who's under attack, but he is under attack because he is a Zulu man, and therefore the Zulu nation itself is under attack.
The Pietermaritzburg High Court will decide on Friday if Zuma should be arrested and jailed, pending the outcome of his appeal before the Constitutional Court. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The UN says humanitarian access has improved within Ethiopia's troubled Tigray region, with large areas now accessible, but constraints are still restricting food and other aid from getting to the needy. US, UN, and EU officials are calling for open access and further actions to help cement a unilateral ceasefire announced by Ethiopia last month. US State Department spokesman Ned Price explains.
What we know is that unilateral announcement needs to be followed up with concrete changes on the ground to end the conflict, to stop the atrocities, and importantly, to allow safe and unhindered humanitarian assistance. The people of Tigray have and continue to suffer tremendously, and the ability of this humanitarian assistance to enter the region unimpeded and unhindered is of paramount importance to us. We call on all armed actors to commit to an immediate, indefinite, negotiated ceasefire.
Tigray has been hit by extreme hunger. Janez Lunacek, European Commissions for Crisis Management, blamed the Ethiopian government, calling the situation, quote, a siege, unquote, that, quote, may amount to war crimes, unquote, and that, quote, starvation of civilians being used as weapons of war, unquote. Addis Ababa has denied it's blocked off the area and communications. The much-feared third wave of COVID-19 is becoming a reality in Zimbabwe, with the number of new cases more than doubling in a week. The government is introducing tighter preventive measures. Reporter Kuzenai Svinavashi has more details.
Information Minister Monica Mutswangwa gave an update on the situation.
The nation is informed that the surge, which has been reported the previous week, continues, with a total of 8,042 cases recorded during the period under review, compared to 3,882, which was reported the previous week. This represents a 107% increase. As you might be aware, the entire country is now under level 4 lockdown.
She announced the revised steps the government is undertaking.
The nation is advised that the exemption mechanisms, which was used during the first lockdown in 2020, will be reactivated with immediate effect. And also would like to tell you that stiffer penalties will be imposed for violations of COVID-19 restrictions, including the withdrawal of operating licenses.
Under the exemption system, people moving around will need to provide exemption letters from their employers. Government says lack of personal protective equipment, or PPEs, in some parts of the country, along with misinformation on vaccine side effects, have worked against their efforts to fight COVID-19. Critics say that, corruption aside, a new lockdown presents an opportunity for the government to increase vaccine uptake if those inoculated are allowed to go about making use of their vaccination cards. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The recent International Trade Union Conference Global Rights Index for the year 2021 reveals that Zimbabwe is among the 10 countries for violating the rights of workers. Andy Gondo gives us more on the story.
The report says the countries have violated collective bargaining rights, escalated surveillance of workers, and infringed the right to privacy, among other violations. Joining Zimbabwe are among the 10 worst countries are Belarus, Brazil, Bangladesh, Colombia, Egypt, Honduras, Myanmar, Turkey, and the Philippines. The report alleges the countries also exploited workers and withheld vital information about the spread of the COVID-19 virus in workplaces. Zimbabwe is spotlighted for the harassment and prosecution of union leaders who called for strikes to demand unpaid pandemic allowances. The report, which assesses the workers' rights and conditions in 149 countries, says in 65% of the countries, workers had no or limited access to the justice system. It said the most severe cases were in Belarus, Honduras, the Philippines, and Zimbabwe. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions and its leadership say they have borne the brunt of what they say is state harassment. Peter Mtasa is the Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions.
The government has done nothing to correct the past errors. In fact, it has increased its brutality against trade unionists, its repression against workers. In 2018, October 11, it rounded up over 57 ZCTU activists who were demonstrating against high taxation austerity measures and high cost of living. In 2019 January, it went on a rampage, unleashing security forces against defenseless citizens, and many people, almost 1,000, were arrested, many people were killed, and many people were injured. It also did the same on 31 July 2020.
Takawafira Joe of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe says teachers have experienced much pain as the government has ignored rights of workers.
For the majority of the civil servants, particularly teachers, nurses, and the rest of the civil service, there's always been a collective begging, or there's not been any binding collective bargaining where the employer and employees negotiate or even reach arbitration. The negotiation has been infinite without any time frame. So the whole essence of what I took is highlighted is correct, and the government has been arrogant, intransigent, and irresponsible, and giving starvation wages to workers. Government also unilaterally reduced the salaries of teachers in particular and other civil servants from about US $520 and US $550 to about US $35 in 2020, and the current US $100 to $130 or equivalent. So
Joe says Zimbabwe has violated conventions of the International Labour Organization, to which Zimbabwe is a signatory. Sociopolitical analyst Efinwe says Zimbabwe's workers may need international support.
This is a disturbing trend, particularly given the fact that there is a long list of provision of human rights of workers in the constitution of Zimbabwe. There is a need for vigorous and robust intervention by locals and as well as by the international community to protect labor in Zimbabwe, which is very much dwindling, but that must...
The government in the past has expressed its commitment to collective bargaining. The Minister of Public Service, Labor and Social Welfare, Paul Mavima, however, has rejected one of the civil service demands to pay wages in foreign currency, which the workers say is fair in a multi-currency economic system. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
A new report by the UN Children's Fund and the World Health Organization shows that billions of people around the world will be unable to access safely managed household drinking water, sanitation and hygiene services in 2030, unless the rate of progress quadruples. For the first time, the report also presents emerging national data on menstrual health. Mavis Okiri in Juazi in Ashanti region of Ghana has more.
The Joint Monitoring Program report presents estimates on household access to safely manage drinking water, sanitation and hygiene services over the past 5 years. It also assesses progress towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goal of ensuring that everyone has access to manage water and sanitation for all by 2030. Tom Slaymaker is a senior statistics and monitoring specialist WASH for UNICEF based in New York. He says the report shows that in 2020, 71% of the global population had access to basic hand washing facilities with soap and water at home. However, in sub-Saharan Africa, just 26% of the population has hand washing facilities at home. He says sub-Saharan Africa had a long way to go to meet the targets of universal access to safe drinking water, sanitation and hygiene by 2030. Slaymaker says in 2020, just 30% of the population in the region had access to safe drinking water and 21% of the population had safe sanitation services. He says about 380 million people in Africa will be without basic drinking water, 700 million without sanitation service, and around 370 million people will lack basic hand washing facilities by 2030 if efforts were not as related. In sub-Saharan Africa, he notes, about 54% of urban population has safe drinking water compared with 30% in rural areas. Slaymaker says the COVID-19 pandemic has really thrown a spotlight on the problem of access to improved water and sanitation on the African continent.
It has created renewed interest especially in hand hygiene, an understanding of the importance of drinking water, sanitation and hygiene for preventing and controlling the spread of disease. There has been quite a big push since the start of the pandemic to get governments to pay greater attention to this, and there is now a big global movement which is driving towards hand hygiene for all, and the focus there is on trying to improve access to hand washing facilities in homes, but also in schools and healthcare facilities and in public places, and to just raise awareness of the importance of hand hygiene for public health.
He says research shows that compliance with hand hygiene measures was quite low, citing an example that in Madagascar and Tanzania, less than 80% of the population washed their hands after being in public places. Slaymaker says there needs to be more investment in facilities and for governments on the continent to make sure resources go where they are needed most to ensure universal coverage for safe drinking water, sanitation and hygiene by 2030. He says there also needs to be capacity building in the needed sector. He says emerging data on menstrual health show that in many countries, a significant proportion of women and girls were unable to meet menstrual health needs. There are significant disparities, in particular among vulnerable groups such as the poor and those with disabilities.
We also have information on whether women and girls have access to materials, menstrual materials, and whether they have a private place to wash and change. So, for example, in Burkina Faso, we have some data that shows quite a high proportion, 87% had access to materials, but just 74% had a private place to wash and change.
He says less than half of women and girls in South Sudan, Malawi and Cameroon reported that they were satisfied with facilities and materials available for managing their menstruation. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
Malian refugees Amir Ag Abdullahi and Mohamed Oud Najim met in Burkina Faso refugee camp after spending much of their youth fleeing Islamist violence. They struggled with trauma until they found dance. Young men joined a program founded by an internationally acclaimed Burkinabe dancer that trains marginalized youth as a tool for reconciliation and healing. Claire McDougall has this report from Ouagadougou.
The air in the Ouagadougou studio is heavy with sweat as Burkinabe dance instructor Adrissa Kafondo critiques his 25 students. We educate everyone who comes here, he says. Dance can allow you to reinvent yourself, says Kafondo, and become another person. 20-year-old Amri Ag Abdullahi and 23-year-old Mohamed Oud Najim, ethnic Tuaregs, are struggling to master the new routine. But for much of their lives, they've been struggling to survive. Until late 2019, the two were living in an insecure refugee camp on the Mali-Burkina Faso border after fleeing Islamist militants in their villages near Timbuktu. In the camp, they attended a workshop by France-based Burkinabe dancer Salia Sanu. It was a discovery that led them to Burkina Faso's capital, where this year they joined the program. Dance has helped us to forget many of the things we have been through, says Abdullahi. When we came here, there was sadness, he says, a lot of sadness. The three-year dance program aims to help marginalized youth and refugees, many of them recovering from trauma and violence, says Sanu in comments sent from France.
Le centre se donne comme mission d'aller vers le public, d'aller vers les jeunes.
The centre has a mission to reach out to the public, he says, to reach out to youth in difficult situations and to reach out to refugees to do cultural and artistic mediation. Sanu says, through dance, these people can find themselves and gain confidence to rebuild their lives. In many African countries, dancers can make a living working at festivals, weddings, and other celebrations. Najim says dance is also helping the refugees to express themselves and tell their stories. When we were at the camp in Mentau, we were closed in, he says. I wasn't happy to be alive, says Najim. I was just living. That was it for me. My life changed with dance, he says, and I'm more at ease than before and have overcome a lot of things. Tuareg community leader Ag Musa Daoulu praises the dance program as education and jobs are hard to find for Burkina Faso's 23,000 Malian refugees. He has known the two men since they started dancing. It would be great if they could become professionals, says Daoulu. The two could train 20 more youths, he says, and teach others. As for Abdoulaye and Najim, they hope the training will help them become known as dancers, not just refugees. Claire McDougall for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Chinedu Ofo in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.